Tom
Hurst,
a T. I got Tom. Having arrived. Tatra. There. Na. Na. Kachana. Anyone. Adriat. Received. Vamanatam. Not receiving respect. Yajna Kritaha. Of the performer of the sacrifice Daksha. Bayat. From fear. Janaha. Person. Rite. Except. Swasrihi. Her own sisters. Fai. Indeed. Jananim. Mother. Cha. And. Sa'adaraha. With respect. Prema Ashrukantyaha. Whose throats were filled with tears of affection. Parisasvajahu. Embraced. Muda. With glad faces. Translation. When Sati, with her followers, reached the arena, because all the people assembled were afraid of Daksha, none of them received her well. No one welcomed her but her mother and sisters, who, with tears in their eyes and with glad faces, welcomed her and talked with her very pleasingly. Can repeat? When Sati, with her followers, reached the arena, because all the people assembled were afraid of Daksha, none of them received her well. No one welcomed her but her mother and sisters, who with tears in their eyes and with glad faces welcomed her and talked with her very pleasingly. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. The mother and sisters of Sati could not follow the others, who did not receive Sati very well. Due to natural affection, they immediately embraced her with tears in their eyes and with loving feelings. This shows that women as a class are very soft-hearted. Their natural affection and love cannot be checked by artificial means. Although the men present were very learned brahmanas and demigods, they were afraid of their superior daksha. And because they knew that their welcoming Sati would displease him, although in their minds they wanted to receive her, they could not do so. Women are naturally soft-hearted, but men are sometimes very hard-hearted. So, feminist verse. So, tamagatam tatra nakaschana driyar vimanatam yagikato vayajanaha vates vashir vay jananim sasadaraha. Prema Shukantya Parisasvajur Mudha. Okay. Om Ganatim Dandasha Gananjana Shilakya Chaksur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this is actually a very important verse as far as sociology, politics, and also, as far as vegetarianism, that may come as a shock to all of you. Very, very important verse. And about the nature of women versus the nature of men. And this will be a feminist class, in case those of you were not so inclined, you're welcome to. There's the door over there. Anyway, so let's take some other examples of ladies in the Vedic literature who were soft-hearted. Another example we find is that of Draupadi. Draupadi had her five sleeping sons killed by, anyone remember who? Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama killed the five sleeping sons. He was running away, and she sent Bhimsen, Arjuna, and they captured Ashwatthama, brought back Ashwatthama. And Bhimsen was ready to do what with Ashwatthama? Squish him. Kill him. Kill him. You know, basically, you know, which is how Bheem Sang killed people. You know, he squished them, turned them into little basketballs of flesh. Anyway, and but she immediately became very soft-hearted when she saw this Aswatthama. She said, "Well," and actually, she had some philosophical explanation too. Her soft-heartedness was not without some philosophy. She said, "You know, he's the son of a Brahmin. It's not actually applicable to kill a Brahmana, or a Brahmana's son, or Brahma Bandhu. And also, creepy, that's Dronacharya's wife. It doesn't mean someone who's creepy. The word creepy can also mean feminine for mercy. Kripa, creepy. So you understand. So she also didn't have a husband anymore because her husband was killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra. And therefore, you know, if the husband is dead, the son is actually the representative of the husband in the sense that the son protects the husband, so it's necessary to have someone to protect her. So, you know, it'd be like killing her because she didn't undergo what's called the sati rite when Drona died, right? Because normally the lady would undergo the sati rite, not forced like nowadays. They have a law against sati because, you know, the women were actually thrown into the fire. Instead of voluntarily embracing the fire. And they loved the husband so much in the old days that they couldn't bear to live without the husband. And actually, even nowadays, you see some, not remnants of the sati rite, so to speak, but of the intense love people have for each other. Sometimes the wife dies first and the husband dies within a few months or a few days after that because they just can't bear to live without each other. This is real intense love. You don't really find this in America so much. You know, in America, you know, the body is barely cold, and the woman or man is looking for a new paramour, a new love, isn't it? You know, just it's really creepy when you think about it. Whereas in traditional India, you know, traditional like South India, people are actually much more. Anyway, they're much more devoted and chaste, and both the men and the women, like that. It's interesting. It's actually interesting. So anyway, so with Draupadi, she was actually very merciful to this Aswatthama. And Arjuna, of course, the story goes that Arjuna was in a dilemma because he had Bheem Sang and Krishna saying, you know, squish the guy, as Mother Krishna Priya said. And Yudhisthira, you know, feeling a little bit compassionate, and Draupadi feeling a little bit, very compassionate. So he actually had a compromise, you know, he cut the jewel out of the hair, out of the head, you know, and then the hair and like that. So that way it was like killing without killing, you understand, defaming. Actually in the Vedic culture, defaming someone is considered practically a fate worse than death. Especially for a Kshatriya, since their fate were worse than death, that someone loses his reputation. And even in India today, people are very much concerned with reputation, isn't it? They'd rather die or something like that, rather than be public about something that's really, you know, really hurts their reputation. Whereas in America, you know, everybody's just out on the internet with everybody's reputation, criticizing everybody. You know, you can find out anything you wanted to know or didn't want to know about anybody else just by Googling their name. That's the problem. Anyway, the problem may be a good thing too, so you can avoid getting cheated. So there's Draupadi, and there's other examples of that too. I don't want to dwell on the examples, like for example, Rukmini, when Krishna tried to make her angry, she just fainted out of love. You know, Krishna said, you know, you're still young, you can get remarried. You know, she was a grandmother. But in those days, being a grandmother meant you're still pretty young. And these days, being a grandmother means you're over the hill. So anyway, so she fainted, you know, just out of love, you know, emotion, extreme emotion. Whereas Krishna, he was pretty premeditated on the whole thing. You see the difference in man psychology and woman psychology, even with Krishna and Rukmini. Krishna was premeditated, thinking, I'm really going to enjoy getting her upset. You know, I don't enjoy that rasa, you know, the taste or the mellow. for making her really upset at me. So he was planning out in his little devious mind. And then she fainted instead. Anyway, it's not that she was unintelligent, but she had these emotions like that. And another example, I was thinking of, it was Kayadu. Kayadu was taken into the ashram of Narada Muni. And Narada Muni was preaching about Vishnu. And certainly you couldn't have taken her husband into the ashram. Her husband, of course, was Hiranyakashipu. And, you know, anyway, Hiranyakashipu would have never entered. What to speak of, he could not bear to hear about Krishna. It was just like too much, because Krishna had killed his brother. You know, Krishna was his enemy. Lord Narayan, Vishnu, was his enemy. So anyway, so there's many examples of that type of, you know, womanly nature, which is actually quite nice, very soft womanly nature, as Prabhupada said here. And men are sometimes hard-hearted. And one thing I've been studying about recently, just to deviate a little bit from Shastra, not to deviate philosophically, but to deviate as far as the different stories, I've been reading a book about genocides. You know, genocide, of course, the word side doesn't mean you're taking someone's side. It means to kill, like infanticide, different things like that, or homicide, or suicide. You understand? Different types of sides. And genocide means to focus on killing a particular race or a particular type of person in a particular type of body, okay? Genocide. So I've been reading about that. And it's interesting, you know, I noticed that it's always the man who planned the genocides. And who, you know, I mean, because sometimes the women get into it in an emotional fervor. I'm not saying that the women just, like, preach to their husbands all the time, like, Ravana's wife was preaching to Ravana, you know, you better give back Sita. It's not like that, but sometimes the women get into it, emotionally get into it, but the men are much more devious in that. And just like planning out, you know, really mean streaks there. I'm not saying all the world's problems are due to men. Although, some literature we've read, they actually talk about this. NBC literature, they talk about, you know, how there was everybody's worshiping the female goddess and they were all in love and everything like that, peace and love for many, many years until those men actually got rid of the female goddesses. No, that's not what I'm saying. But if you actually look at, like, all these mass killings in the world, there were several genocides I read about. Of course, one of the ones I've read about previously was the one in India, where 80 million people were killed, 80 million Hindus were killed by not all the Muslims were doing that. We don't want to just, you know, take a class and hate a class like that. But there was this Mohammad Ghazni, who's one of the biggest murderers, actually even bigger than Aurangzeb, who is more famous. And he was responsible for killing like 60 or 70 million Hindus. And so, anyway, so getting back to the point, the men, they plan these things. So just getting into modern genocides, there's some modern genocides, that there was one I read about in Armenia, actually it was in Turkey, and there's Armenians in Turkey, and the Armenians, they're different than the normal Turkish people, who are... and generally Muslim, but they're, you know, they're not actually a fanatic Muslim type of person. And the Armenians, they're generally Christian. So around the beginning of right before World War II, the Turkish people had the idea, you know, let's get rid of some of the Turkish people, just whip the other people in the country into a fervor to get rid of all the Armenians. And there was mass slaughter of tens of millions of Armenians. And they were so nasty to them. I mean, it's incredible that the men, and not the women, they would, I didn't even know I should mention this in Bhagavatam class, but I'll mention it, that the men would grab Armenian girls, they'd be riding on horses and have a game to throw them down on spears. And whoever threw, you know, whoever impaled the girl first was actually the winner. so to speak. And if the girl wasn't impaled, they'd pick her up and impale her on. I mean, can you imagine that? Just because she was, you know, the Turkish people, just because they were of a different race or a different nationality or a different religion. That's what genocide is, you know, just attacking people because they're specific. You know, genes, usually technical meaning is they have a different type of body, you know, different genes. But actually, sometimes it's that word is utilized to indicate, you know, the attacks of people, attacking people because they have a different religion or attacking people because they have a different, you know, color hair or something like that. So, I mean, horrendous. And then the Nazis, they actually learned about this genocide in World War, which occurred right before World War II, and they actually utilized the knowledge that of the history to propagate, you know, their particular dogma, which was to kill, you know, the Jews and the Roma and the people they considered of inferior genetic stock, who were polluting, you know, polluting the what they call the Aryan stock. You understand? Aryan, taken from Sanskrit, meaning, you know, the topmost people, you know, the traditional German stock. And then there's been so many genocides, even in this century, it's interesting, in Hutsis and Tutsis, and they follow the same general pattern. Now what is the, I don't want to talk too much about that, but what is a general pattern? The general pattern is that you have to give a name, like the men are very good at that, like give a name to your enemy, like a derogatory name. You know, because we're in a world of names. In fact, in Sanskrit, that's called upadhi. Upadhi means designation. So when you give something a specific name and you just like propagate that name amongst the population, then pretty much everybody falls in line with that name. You know, like infidels, for example. You know, infidels or kafirs or something like that. Or, of course, we have names too, which I'll talk about in a second. We do the same thing. And it creates an animosity. And you're actually seeing that entity, that person, in terms of the name, rather than seeing them as an individual anymore, or seeing them as a person anymore. I mean, this is quite common. Of course, Prabhupada did say, you know, give the dog a bad name and hang him. So that's the same sort of thing. And then, of course, that also applies. I was thinking about genocides, for example. Like in America, we also have genocide. We're going after certain creatures to eat them. That's genocide. Mm. You may not think like that, or most people don't think like that, that, you know, in the slaughterhouse or they're killing the cows. But that's genocide, because you're focusing on killing a specific type of entity. Now, if you're just killing people to rob a bank, that's not genocide. That's cool. I'm not saying that's, I'm just joking about that. I mean, but that's not genocide. You're just like trying to practically, you know, get some money, which we wouldn't agree with, but it's a different type of thing because someone's in your way. But to actually focus on a particular class of entities, that's actually genocide. And so killing animals is genocide. I mean, just like they have hunting here in America. Anyone's heard of hunting? You get a hunting license and there's hunting season. You know, can you imagine? I say, well, it's hunting season for Hare Krishnas this year. You know, between the months of January and March, because they're overpopulating, you want to keep the population down of Hare Krishnas, so we're going to kill them. So that sounds ridiculous. But they're doing that with deer, and deer are actually quite cute, too. You know, and people are doing that. Of course, even this genocide against animals, against insects. You know, people look at insects and go, ooh, let's kill them all, kill all the cockroaches. In fact, actually, it's interesting that sometimes when they do the human genocides, the leaders of society call the people or the class of people they want to kill, they call them cockroaches. They call them cockroaches, or they even say, you know, in the euphemism, that you should kill all the cockroaches and bring all the cabbages back. The cabbages refer to the heads of the people that you want to kill. So they use different names. It's amazing. It's amazing, actually, the atrocities that have been committed and continue to be committed, even in America. You know, we're not talking about human beings on human beings, because Americans sometimes are a little more civilized. But in the name, just in the name, you know, just giving people different names or different entities different names, or even abortion, for example. I mean, abortion is also genocide. You're attacking a particular class of entities, but you're giving it a name. You're just saying it's, you know, it's not life, or it's you know, choice, or whatever. You know, just changing the names is quite interesting. So men are quite adept at doing that, and sometimes the women go along with it. We're not saying the women are just like innocent, you know, sweet little things who never go along with anything the men do. That would be nice. That would be nice. But actually, it's the men who plan out all these things in general. You may find an exception amongst the women, particularly nowadays. You got real masculine women. And yet, feminine men. But anyway, so, but people plan out these things. So what? This is actually very similar to what's being discussed in the Bhagavatam, the story of Prahlad Maharaj about friends and enemies. How Sanda and Amarka, they attempted to teach Prahlad Maharaj about how to consider certain classes of people enemies and certain classes of people friends. This is demoniac consciousness. Women naturally don't think like that. You know, unless, you know, they're influenced by men. I mean, women get into other things, you know, like if someone, it's not that they don't have envy, it's not that they're pure, you know, pure-hearted, you know, but it's not like that there's this premeditated type of stuff. In general, there's exceptions in general, but with the men, it's really premeditated. Like you see with Hitler, it's premeditated. With all the genocides, it's actually premeditated. With the abortionists, it's premeditated. With the animal killers, it's premeditated. You know, the nomenclature that they use. Anyway, so this is going on in the world today. So how do we deal with this? You know, how, and we do it. Before I mention how to deal with it, we do it also in the Krishna conscious movement. Just like I got a letter from someone the other day. They said, you know, is it all right to worship, is it all right to work a karmi job? And, you know, karmi job. I was just thinking about this. Because I've sort of gotten out of that, you know, that designation type of consciousness that many devotees do get into when they first join the Krishna conscious movement. You know, when you first join the movement, you really get into like these black and white conceptions, like karmis, devotees, demons, rakshasas, malechas, the good guys and the bad guys. And you really get into it. So fortunately, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we've made some spiritual advancement in the last 45, 50 years. So, you know, when I heard this expression, it rankled me. For those of you who don't know what that means, it means it gave me some pain. You know, karmi job. I said, what's a karmi job? I was thinking about that. And that meant, you know, it means basically, you know, working with people who are not members of the Krishna conscious movement. And I was thinking, this is really bad consciousness to have, because Krishna says, yastu sarvani bhutane atmanai banam pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatamana vigigupshate. That actually, one who is Krishna conscious, he sees everybody as quality one, yastu sarvani bhutane Atmana Ivana Pashati. He doesn't hate anyone or make that distinction between us and them. You know, he's not thinking, you know, I'm an American and therefore this is a British person, or this is an Indian person, or this is a Iranian person, or I'm a North Korean, here's a South Korean, or North Korean. You know, there's a whole bogus CRAP. So, to use the French, garbage. That's French. Basura. Anyway, so to use the Spanish. So anyway, so I was thinking, you know, that that when he wrote me that letter about, you know, Karmi job, he said, what's it? Karmi job? I said, no. Prabhupada actually said if one's working and giving the results to Krishna, even he's working in a factory, he's like in the renounced order of life. Prabhupada actually said that. You know. So where's all this, you know, this discrimination, name-calling and everything coming from? You know, that's really interesting. It divides us. You know, when you give something a name, you know, a static designation, it actually divides people, causes animosity between people. I mean, I know Srila Prabhupada sometimes used these static definitions, but inside he was actually thinking, seeing all living entities being equally all part and parcel of Krishna. Prabhupada didn't hate anyone. Just like I was talking to one of my godbrothers about 3 or 4 years ago. We were talking about being a second-class devotee where you're supposed to discriminate between the innocent, the envious, you know, the supreme personality of Godhead and the devotees, etc. And he said you should hate the envious. And I had a really heavy disagreement with him. I said, you're a rascal. No, that would be a designation too. I know, I'd be a hypocrite. I mean, I'm just joking. I didn't say that. I said, you're wrong. It doesn't say we should hate the envious. Second class devotee just avoids the envious. You know, the people who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. But you don't hate anyone. In other words, you don't think of someone as being envious. You just think that they're acting in such a way that will interfere with your, you know, they won't accept Krishna consciousness. It's just a practical ascertainment of what their mentality is at the present. But you pray for them at the same time to become Krishna conscious. Like Lord Jesus Christ, he was being pinned on the cross and he said, forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they do. You know, he wasn't saying, you know, these demons. Where did he say that? I mean, where do you find Lord Jesus Christ's statements? You know, they're pinning him on the cross. These demons, rakshasas, ooh, Romans, yuck. I hate Romans. Actually, it was the Jewish people who were more inclined. Anyway, who were primarily responsible, not the Romans. The Romans just, anyway, they were manipulated. But anyway, so no, he just said, forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they're in ignorance, you know. You know, so he wasn't taking a designation. But we find throughout religions that people do take these designations to divide, to cause factions. Like even the Christians, because there were some of the Jewish people, you know, the Jewish priests were actually responsible to a large extent for the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And then they hate the Jews as a class. Then they become anti-Semitic or something like that. And they even have these plays called passion plays. You ever heard of a passion play? They were in Europe, where you actually show the Jews. A Jewish person is depicted with a real long nose or something like that in these plays. It's really horrible. And then they arouse people's passion against the Jewish people. And then that's why in Europe they used to have these pogroms. That's not a program, a pogrom. A pogrom is when they would get real roused up, you know, and riled up. And they would go to the Jewish ghetto where the Jewish people were living and just like attack the Jews after seeing these plays. Around Easter time they would have these plays. This is history. I mean, people should be aware of history. Actually, it's not a devotee should be ignorant of history. If you study history, there's a chance you won't repeat the same things that have occurred before. And you could apply certain things you find out from studying history to even your own application of Krishna consciousness. We're not meant to be unintelligent in that regard. So anyway, welcome. Swargatam. So that's the whole point. These designations, where you actually apply designation upadis to people. And of course, the Vedic statement is sarvapadi vinirmuktam. We have to get rid of these designations, not only insofar as how we see others, but also how we see ourselves. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tatvatrena nirmalam richikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchite. And understand that our only designation, everyone else's designation, is what? They're servants of Krishna. That's all. Just see everybody like that. That's yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanu pashyati. I mean, there's really no karmis. mean, that's a ridiculous statement, Carmi, isn't it? I mean, I hear that from devotees all the time. They say, you know, this is one of the interesting things. They say, I don't want to work a Carmi job, so instead I'll go out in the street and sell hats. And, you know, beg money from people for, you know, some charity that doesn't exist, or maybe I'm giving 1 cent to the charity, I'm keeping 99 cents for myself out of each dollar. You know, Hare Krishna, we should avoid words that divide us, because language actually doesn't. Anyway, so getting back to the point, that doesn't mean we should let the ladies take over the Krishna conscious movement, because Prabhupada does make the point here that women are naturally soft-hearted. But we should get away from these hard-hearted designations and start to, you know, be open with our hearts in terms of associating with people. And I was actually listening to something very nice last night. This devotee, Brajalila, was talking about preaching Krishna consciousness. And she said it has to come from the heart, not from the brain. Of course, you use your brain, you present the philosophy, but unless you're actually feeling the mood of compassion, she was talking about this at the, there was a bridge preaching seminar given at Washington, D.C. So that it's all on the internet, the videos. So unless you have this mood of compassion, it's not effective. In other words, you have to be from the heart. So us men, we have to avoid this, you know, this designation thing. You know, he's in Maya, or he's a rascal, or he's a deviant. You understand? So we have to avoid that. And the women also, on the other hand, or okay, let's give a balanced viewpoint. The women have to avoid getting too mushy-gushy. You know, they also, there has to be an application of intelligence along with the heart. It's a balanced thing. If you're just all heart, then you're going to be like that lady the Prabhupada said treated her nephew with sentiment and didn't train him up properly, and he became a criminal and he killed someone and he was eventually condemned to be killed. And he, of course, he chewed her ear off. That's another story. But then you'll be like that if you're overly sentimental. But if you're overly just like, you know, just like designating people, classifying people and things like that, and putting names on people, then you're going to go to the, you're going to be cruel too. So both sides are bad. So we have to have a mixture. You know, use the intelligence and from the heart, and don't designate people. We can talk about activities like Jesus Christ said, what? Hate the what and not the what? Hate the sin and not the sinner. So we have to be very careful. Deal with the activity, but don't designate the person according to the activity. Okay? That's enough philosophy for today. All glories to His divine grace. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.